Your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco.
I was thinking about how much time I have spent in my life thinking about different careers. For some reason, I was always interested in it from when I was a kid because my dad, who was a Holocaust survivor, found that what healed him was not going to Holocaust remembrances, but work. And in fact, I got to know a whole lot of other Holocaust survivors. And it seems that the ones who moved forward and didn't stay mired in horrible memories were people who looked forward instead of looking back and got involved in work. And I think over the last 30 years, I'm saying this, I suppose, to establish a little credibility for what I'm about to talk about. I created the career channel at U.S. News, where they have this whole career section where I reviewed hundreds of careers, and then I wrote Cool Careers for Dummies, which reviewed 500 careers, and it came out in three editions, so I went over them three times. And now my new forthcoming book is the Dummies flagship series called Careers for Dummies, and I've got 340 careers there. So I mention all that to you to kind of set the stage for the fact that I have curated for today's show some careers that I think particularly are worthy of your attention. They have some kind of an ideal. They score the highest overall in terms of many people enjoying it, no carcinogenic clanging in factories, a reasonable job market, training that doesn't take 10 zillion years, all those kind of factors. And of course, none of them are perfect like a human being. There's no perfect human being, but they score pretty well. And then in preparing for the show, rather than just list them in the traditional way of, you know, saying, well, these are careers for people with PhDs, and these are careers for people who are people. The first section, I created a section a list of careers that are specifically particularly wise for career changers, because so many people, to be honest, people listen to KLW, there aren't a whole lot of people who are 20. And so people who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s are saying, you know, I would love to change careers. And so here are some careers that I found in my private practice have been particularly open to career change. It doesn't require 9 years more of school. The job market isn't so crazy. And I want to stop by talking about one with an anecdote that occurred just today. I wanted to buy my wife a bracelet for Valentine's Day. And so I do most of my shopping these days online. And there was this very nice seeming jewelry store with a very nice bracelet. And long story short, I ended up speaking with the saleswoman. And I noticed her New York accent. And of course, I'm from New York. And so we started to chat. Well, she then proceeded to tell me that she was a teacher in the New York City public schools for 30 years before leaving, because she had kind of been fed up with the bureaucracy and the system and all the challenges. And she's now working for this jewelry store as a salesperson, making as much money as she made as a teacher. And she's enjoying it because jewelry is a fun thing. People are buying jewelry because if they're buying it for themselves because they like it, or they're buying it for their loved one, and it's a positive thing. So sales is the first of the careers that I want to tout to you if you're a career changer. Why? Because unlike so many careers where you are a cost center, so in other words, if you're in customer service or you're in research and development or in human resources, you're a cost center. Whether it be, you know, and believe me, nonprofits as well as companies are very interested in costs and profits. So, but sales, you're a profit center. And so and this woman was a teacher. She had a very good gift of communication. So if you are somebody who's got that good gift of communication, would like to make good money, can't afford to take this, you know, very often when people change careers, they've got to go and take, you know, bottom of the barrel salary because they're a newbie. They have no experience. But because sales jobs are part or completely on commission, if you really have the ability to gain people's trust while remaining ethical, and you have knowledge or interest in some product or service, that can be a reasonably viable career for would-be career changers. Next. And there's two variations on that, a theme that I want to talk about. One is fundraiser. the nonprofit analog to salesperson is fundraiser. You're asking people for their money. But instead of, you know, in a for-profit, you're giving them a product. Here you're giving them, in a nonprofit, you're giving them a promise. You're giving them the promise that if you donate your money to X cause, people will benefit in excess of the amount of money that you're donating. So if you're, as many listeners to KALW are, if you're nonprofit-oriented, then, and you are a good communicator and want to make good money, being a fundraiser can be very good because, again, you are a profit center rather than a cost center. If you're, for example, the provider of the services for the nonprofit, tutoring for kids or whatever, you're a cost center. But if you're bringing in the money, you're a profit center and therefore more likely to get paid well. Another example of sales, which you don't think of as sales, is being a personnel recruiter. When you are working for as a personnel recruiter, say within a company, say within Apple, your job is to recruit people and sell them on the idea of coming to work for Apple, given that particular job description. If you are working for an independent headhunting agency like a Korn Ferry or a Spencer Stewart, your job is to convince employers to hire you, that is, you Spencer Stewart, you Korn Ferry, you know, representing them, to recruit a good candidate for them in a time when they can just place an ad on Craigslist or Indeed or LinkedIn. But you can see how recruiter, although not officially called salesperson, is a sales job and tends to be very well paying. I have a client who is a salesperson in-house for a, you know, pretty second-tier web company, I'll just say an e-commerce company. He makes $140,000 a year. He's 25 years old because it's largely commission. So it's the kind of thing that's easy to transition into because the company or nonprofit doesn't have to pay you a big base salary. They can give you a small base salary, but only give you big dollars if you produce and make a lot more for them than what the cost of your salary is, and that's why it can be nothing is easy. No career change is easy. Anybody who tells you it is just lying. But relatively speaking, sales, or it's nonprofit analog, nonprofit fundraising, is a good career for career changers. Now I'm going to go on the other end of the pay continuum, but I'd like to invite you, because I really love when this show is really interactive. So if you are a career changer, a would-be career changer, and would like some advice as to what might be a good fit for you, because you might be horrible at sales, but you might be very perfect at something else that you could transition into, I do what I call workovers. I won't pummel you, but I will ask you questions in an attempt to try to find you a career that is a good fit, whether you're a career changer or even if you're just starting out. The phone number here at KALW and Work with Marty Nemko for that workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. As I was saying, another career on the other end of the pay continuum that tends to be viable as a career-changing possibility is being a flight attendant. There are a lot of career changers who would rather trade money for the adventure of meeting lots of new people, seeing new places, yes, the free travel. And so that's a kind of a career. And again, doesn't require a huge skill set. You have to be calm, service-oriented, very responsible. It's the kind of career that you can transition into without 9,000 years of school. Another career that is relatively easy to transition into because the training is relatively short, and this is for people who are more numbers people rather than people or a data people computer people, is a bookkeeper. So many small businesses are not going to hire Accenture, you know, or the big five accounting firms. They would like a small personalized person to come in and clean up their records because so many small business people, especially artist types or psychologist types, love doing their art or love doing their counseling, but they don't like the paperwork and the business. I had a client who was a wine bottle photographer. Yes, there are wine photographers who specialize even in wine bottles in Napa, and she hated doing the books. She was very successful, but hated doing the books. So for a while, She ended up hiring a bookkeeper who was simply a solo operator, a one-person person, who simply took all her accounts payable and receivable and stuck them in some basic software, QuickBooks, I guess. And she made a decent living, and it's very personal that way. And it can be particularly rewarding if you specialize in one area that means something for you. So, you know, specializing in professional photographers or psychologists or boutique owners. Seems like I walk down College Avenue with my doggy Einstein all the time, and I'm always seeing boutiques open and close. They almost seem like hobbies rather than money makers. But clearly, many people who are running a clothing boutique or a jewelry boutique are not really, you know, on average, they're going to be less interested in bookkeeping than they are about buying and selling their objet d'art. And so a bookkeeper who specializes in that, if you are somebody who is a fashionista or a jewelry aficionado, or you simply like people who like to talk about fashion and jewelry, gaining some reasonable basic bookkeeping skills, you're not needing to be the super accountant du jour, you don't need a CPA, but it's relatively short training for making at least a decent living. And of course, you know, one of the things that I mentioned at the top of the show, I had a number of factors that I used in selecting the careers to tout for you today, and that is ethics. Those are the kind of careers, you know, what's nice about bookkeeping is, you know, of course, there's always sleazy, you know, double books and all the rest of it. But, you know, done, almost any business can be sleazy. But done right, you're the person trying to keep things in order. So as we get into tax season now, and people, you know, can have good records and document what their expenses are and such. I'd like to give out the phone number again. If you are thinking about a career change and would like my advice on helping you come up with an idea, or you've made one, or you tried to make one unsuccessfully, stories are very valuable. Not just success stories, but failure stories. We are all very eager to tout our successes. We do it on Facebook all the time. But our failure stories may in many ways be at least as instructive. So if you would like a workover to help you come up with a new career, or you have a success story you want to tell us about your career change, or you want to tell us about your aborted attempt and perhaps lessons learned, those are all good reasons to call Work with Marty Nemco and KELW. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another career that people make career changes with relative ease, again, not complete ease, is being a communication specialist. Sometimes it's called PR, sometimes it's called marketing communication, internal communications, whether it be for a company or a government agency or a nonprofit. You could be involved in media relations where your job is to present, quote, news or whatever the new product du jour is for your company to the media. Or communication specialists could be involved in community relations where you're meeting with community groups. Let's say your business wants to expand, or, you know, UC Berkeley. Every time it wants to expand and take over more business buildings, which it does constantly, they've got community relations people to meet with the very activist community groups in Berkeley. Those are all different flavors of communication specialists. And because the job is not inordinately technical, you don't need a PhD. You don't even need probably a master's degree. Somebody who's got the gift of writing and speaking well and who have emotional intelligence in order to connect well with who you're talking with may be able to find themselves in a communication specialist job of one sort or another. Phone number again, if you would like a workover, 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Marty. This is Lacey Babnick.
Hello, Lacey.
Hi. So I have been in the position of a grant manager, a grant writer for a nonprofit for about 2 years, 2.5 years.
Uh-huh.
And I'm finding that there's part of the job that I absolutely love, which is connecting with the different program departments and learning about what their impact is and collecting information and writing about it. The only part of, like, grant writing that is very difficult for me is the living by deadlines. It's, you know, my personality is it's really difficult to live by deadline to deadline and deadline. And so I'm wondering if there's, and I also love the data aspect of my job as well, and collecting that and, you know, visualizing the data and presenting the data. And I'm wondering if there's a good, career change for me out there that would be good for me.
My first take is you're liking too much of your career to make a career change. I'd rather see you deal with your time management problem. Can we do that?
Yeah, that is interesting. Okay.
Right, because what you've told me is how much you love about the job, and then there's this one thing, which is the deadlines that you're meeting, and then you procrastinate, you wait till the last minute, and you have the adrenaline rush, and you're going nuts, and then it gets done, maybe not as good as you wanted. But that's more fixable than making a career change when you've got a career you already like quite a bit. So first of all, I'm going to give you a multiple choice. Which of the let's start with this. Is there a sometimes people do brinksmanship because it's just their habit. You know, in school they were able to procrastinate until the last minute, and lo and behold, they wrote this paper last minute, and oh my God, thanks to grade inflation, they got a B or an A, and so you got in the habit of relying on adrenaline to get you through the deadline. Let me start with that. To what extent does that feel like it resonates with the cause of your procrastination, your deadline problem?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely how school was for me. And also, I mean, I also think that just the nature of the job is that it's like deadline after deadline after deadline, like, you know, reports and other project due dates. And I mean, a factor of it is I could be putting too much on my plate as well, adding additional
Well, let's look at two things. So do you make the mistake of not starting immediately upon given the assignment? Let's say you know you have a month to do it. And are you starting that first day so that you avoid the stress of the last-minute procrastination? Or do you say, I've got a month, I can wait for a few weeks?
It's definitely the latter.
Okay. So I'm not saying it's the full answer, but we're trying to come up with maybe a combination of solutions here.
Mm-hmm.
If we said that part of the solution really is, A, to remember that the cause, it's not you, it's not that you're genetically inferior, it's that in school you learned, you developed the school, ironically, was supposed to help you develop good habits, helped you develop the bad habit of procrastination, and so you don't have to blame yourself, it's not an indictment of you. But then promise yourself from now and forevermore, because changing careers is not so easy, that from the minute when you get a new assignment, you're saying, okay, I will start on this now, and if I get it done early, awesome. I can put it aside and look at it with fresh eyes right before the deadline. What if we said the 11th commandment for you is, as soon as I get the assignment, I am getting started immediatamente?
Yes, it's definitely a change in thinking, but I think I could do it.
So that's part. We're not
that's
done yet.
Sure.
That's a part of it. Do you use a there are time management trackers like Toggle, TOGGL. Do you know about that?
No, I'm not aware of that.
Oh, it's really cool. You press start and stop, and you label every time segment. You note how you're spending your time each day, every 15 or 20 minutes. You can use it on your phone or on your computer. The basic version is free. The premium version is $5 a month, and that can embarrass you into keeping on track. Because if you're spending too much time shopping on the internet while you're supposed to be doing the grant proposal, you can cheat yourself, of course. But if you're, you know, doing this Toggle thing, you may be more likely to stay with it. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. It's it's called Toggle. You said
TOGGL without the E on the end. Normally, the word Toggle is like a toggle switch with an E on the end, but this is just TOGGL.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Now, sometimes those are, you know, kind of positive things. Sometimes fear is the motivation. What if I said, you know, if you go and look for a career, a lot of people who try to look for careers don't make a change, or you got to take a 50% cut in pay, and you may like your new career a lot worse, and you say, oh my God, why did I do this? I loved my job. I loved the research. I loved talking with people, seeing programs. You know, so would the fear of being a bag lady or less successfully employed motivate you to say, I got to get off my butt, and I got to, the minute I get an assignment, I have to start right away. I have to log my time on Toggle. Or would that fear not be a useful technique for you?
I mean, it would definitely be a useful technique, I would say.
Put a little pic, you know, go look, Google, you know, Google images, bag lady. and print out an image of a bag lady and stick it on your desk.
My coworkers would think I'm crazy, but it might be helpful.
What I think I want to do is stop there. I have an infinite number of other tips, but I don't want to overwhelm you. But here is your assignment, kiddo. you are to call me next week on this show.
Okay.
And you
okay.
are to, you know, accountability is another way to keep people motivated. You have had a few thousand people listening to you. And okay. now if you end up, you know, procrastinating and doing nothing, you're going to get a whole lot of disappointed people. We have everywhere, thousands of people rooting for you right now. So are you going to promise me? Now, no, I don't. There's a lot of broken promises that happen these days. Will you give me an honest promise that you will call me next week and tell me the truth about how much progress you've made in dealing with deadlines?
You got it. That sounds good. You got a deal.
All right. Deal. I thank you for calling
okay.
Work with Marty Nemco. You take
okay.
care. Good
Thanks,
luck.
Marty. All right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I'll give out the phone number again. It's going to yell at you occasionally, but it's with good humor, and it's certainly well-intentioned. So if you would like me to direct my well-intentioned self to you and your work-related problem, especially if you're trying to make a career change, because that's what's been topic one for today, and you either don't know what career to change to, or sometimes you call in with that as a problem, we come up with another solution. Problem, the only thing that is required is you got a work problem. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, for me to try to help you solve it with what I call a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you?
Hi, Marty.
Hello.
Hi. I don't need a career makeover because I love what I do.
Okay, great.
But I have a problem. I have a problem, and I just want your special advice. I've been working as an art teacher for various foundations, and I've been on leave for quite some time because I'm getting elderly, but I want to go back to work. Mm-hmm. However, here's the thing. You know when someone likes you. You can tell.
Right.
And you can tell when someone doesn't like
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
But sometimes you can't tell because that person, especially as a supervisor, is so neutral that you don't know. They don't communicate. Everything is professional and above board, but it's also ice cold.
Right.
So here's the thing. As a teacher, I've been very successful. Other teachers I get along with, they see me as a valuable asset to their schools. The kids love me.
Great.
I've had kids, you know, grab a knee and say, "You're the most nicest person I've ever met. Please,
sweet.
Please don't leave." That sort of thing. It is wonderful.
That's great. That is
anyway,
great.
But here's the thing, Marty, and I'll make it brief. I have to go back to work, or I want to go back to work, but I'm afraid to put this last job on my resume because I don't know if I lift up the rock, what might be under it, what this supervisor might say about me.
Let's see what I should do. Right. Let's see if we can diagnose the problem. Some people indeed are cold to everyone, and then maybe they think the world of you. You know, I'm listening to this book on tape, like it's called A Man Named Uwe or something like that. And, you know, he is cold as ice to everybody. But some people are cold to you but not to others. So if you think about this person and the way in which, like, I know somebody who doesn't like me, I could tell, because she is so much nicer to my wife than she is to me. I can just see, you know, she minimizes conversation with me. She does absolutely everything possible to say as little as possible. But when my wife sees her, she's effusive. They have these lovely conversations. So that teaches me that she doesn't like me. So when you think about this boss, does he treat you more icily, to use your word, than he treats other people?
Well, I don't know because I don't have any. There's nothing like that to go on. I only see this person when I turn in my hours, and then there's no one else there. So that doesn't really work. But here's what's making me feel nervous. I offered to expand my services. I sent emails, you know, saying I have other qualifications, other skills, other talents, and got nothing back.
Yeah, well, that's the disgusting norm of today in America, which is the usual response is no response. I get that all the time. My clients get it all the time. So I'm asking you this. I'm not telling.
Yeah. Yes.
In general, I'm too impatient a person and too anxious by nature to live with a lot of ambiguity. So my default is to radical candor. So if this person were local, I would say, can I come in and can we chat for a few minutes? And let's say the person's name was John. I'd say, John, I'm a little nervous about this. I've loved working here. I have fond memories of all the work I do. I get a sense, yeah. I'm not sure, but I get a sense you really don't like me. Is there something I've done to offend you? Is there something I've done to make you think less of me? I feel best when the air is clear. So having that conversation, that can, before you ask him for a reference or whether you decide to put this job on your resume, you can get a sense of whether he really doesn't like you or not. Would that work in your situation?
Well, if I were a more courageous person, that would work just fine. But I think that's probably the right thing to do. I'll try to go about it diplomatically.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
With a very neutral approach myself.
Right. Not accusatorily.
Oh, no, no.
And you put the blame on yourself. You're saying, I'm wondering if I have done something to offend you. I'm wondering if some, so that you're approaching this in a spirit of inquiry, not accusation. Inquiry, not inquisition.
Yeah.
And if some people are uncomfortable doing it verbally, given your own personality, would you be better off to write him a note? Would you be better off calling him? Better off showing up would definitely not work. Would you be better off showing up? What do you think would be the wisest thing to do? The wisest approach?
I think I'll go with the email and just ask if I can expect a good reference or not.
Okay.
And if not, why? Or maybe I should just leave it open-ended. Can I expect a good reference? And then if there's anything negative, find out what it was. What did I do?
I don't think I'd go that far, because it's too tempting to not be honest to you in that regard. Or they could say our official policy is the X. Where if you worded it the way I did, whether it be an email or a phone, you say, I'm a little nervous you've been kind of all business with me. Again, you're not being critical. You've been kind of all business with me. I'm wondering if I've done anything to offend you. That way, without asking for the reference piece first, you get the kind of the answer. And if he's, even if he's not fully forthcoming, emotional intelligence is about sensitivity to tone. Watch his or her body language. Watch the way in which the person says what he or she says. Does he or she truncate the response to be very minimalist? Is she more, he more expansive? So try to build your emotional intelligence antenna, and that's the advantage of doing it in person or by phone. But if you're more uncomfortable by doing it that way and doing it, you'd rather do it by email, there is an advantage of that, which is you can carefully draft it, maybe show it to a trusted person so that the wording is carefully done. But I wouldn't put even if I was doing it in email, I would not focus on the reference yet. I would say I would be focusing on the question, have I done anything to annoy you?
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. That
All
makes
right.
sense.
Yeah. All right. That's my best advice. Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Namco. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you.
And let's, I think we'll just, you are my number one priority, dear listeners. So I'm just going to take a moment, and I think we're going to go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Namco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
I'm on the air now.
You are.
Okay, my name's Mark, and it's the first time I listen to you. So
okay.
I haven't had a job in a really long time, and I was pretty dysfunctional, and now I'm starting to get dysfunctional. I don't have any references or anything like that. So what I want to do is start a nonprofit and teach tennis.
Okay. If you have not had a big work history, starting off on your own puts an awful lot on your shoulders. It's usually wisest, and you can disabuse me, to go slower. If you want to teach tennis and you say nonprofit, I'm implying you want to teach tennis to low-income kids or something like that. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Some place where they don't have anybody, right?
Okay.
And if I could have access to the courts, I'd like to do it. I'm really not that worried about the money.
Okay.
I'd kind of like to set it up where it could continue on without me, if that would be possible.
Lovely. So what I think, but the next, we don't jump, jump a mountain in one step. It would seem to me that there are the city. What city do you live in?
I live in Daly City.
Okay. Well, the city of Daly City or the city of San Francisco has an enormous parks and recreation department. And I bet anything that they teach tennis somewhere along in there. And I would, if money is not critical, you could perhaps more easily get to do it by volunteering or perhaps as paid jobs, working for them as part of their program. So you're not having to raise funds. You're not having to handle the bookkeeping. You can do what you want to do, which is teaching tennis. And if you really are good, you say you want to leave a legacy. So after you've gotten the lay of the land and seeing what works, how do they recruit kids? Where do they do with the equipment? How do they keep the tennis rackets from getting stolen? What are the objections? What are the parents? You know, all that stuff, you can either decide, okay, I'm going to go off on my own, or in concert with the Parks and Rec Department, you're going to write a grant or have a grant written for you to be the director of the tennis program for low-income kids. And so as a result, you're incrementally climbing the mountain rather than taking this giant leap that would require a Superman to go from base camp to the top of the mountain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Where I was thinking about if I did volunteer, then people could get to know me, and then I could start getting references, which I'm sure I'm going to need those.
Exactly, and it also will build your confidence. You said I remember from the very beginning of this conversation, you said you haven't been working for a long time. And
right.
While it's easy to think big and wanting to say, oh my God, I haven't worked for a long time, I really need to catch up, it's usually better to gain your confidence and your competence in baby steps. So
yeah, I agree.
if you're my son or my brother, I tell you, okay, even if you're a substitute fill-in instructor or assistant instructor for the city of Daly City's Easter Tennis Week, that's a good first step, and now you've got that on your resume. You're going to build your confidence, and you can go from there. Sound good?
Yeah, that gave me another good idea. You gave me a lot of good ideas there. Thank you.
I do my best. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. And I'd like to do my best with you. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem of any sort, certainly if you're trying to choose a career, change a career, or I really am very happy to help people. I have so many clients who are well-employed, but they are unhappy, either because of the bureaucracy, coworker they can't stand, supervisee, legal problem. I'm not a lawyer, but there are threatened lawsuits, a spouse, it's very expensive to live in the Bay Area. It's almost impossible to do it on one income, even if it's a six-figure income. Any kind of work-related problem, directly or indirectly work-related, is fair game for what I call a work over here at KELWN, Work with Marty Nemco. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I was taking calls, I was sharing some careers that I thought were particularly likely prospects for career changers. That is, they don't require a zillion years of school. And I want to end that little part of the segment by simply talking about the following. I'm going to start with a little anecdote. Although I've got a PhD from Berkeley and I've had some pretty big jobs, like I've been a consultant to 15 college presidents, if I'm really honest, what was my favorite job my whole life? Driving a taxi cab in New York City. Because I succeeded with every customer. I surprised them because I was perhaps a little more verbal than the average cab driver. I was a fast but safe driver, so they got where they wanted quickly. And I could stop and, I had no boss. I was my own boss. If I wanted to go to the airport, I go to the airport. I want to go to the hotels in downtown Manhattan, I go to the hotel. I want to stop for a slice of pizza, and during the middle of the night, I can do it. And so, and this is going to be the main topic of next week's conversation. I'm going to have this internal debate with myself next week on the radio, in which I'm talking about, should you strive to be the best you can be, or is there an argument made for both? I'm going to do the best I can to argue both sides, but for now, for career changers, it's certainly an interesting option to go for a low pay but easy, pleasurable job, if only because it would allow you plenty of time and energy for an avocation, like the sport you love, or performing, or your activism, or your art, or your writing. Or some people, instead of one low pay, easy, pleasurable job, they have a portfolio of cool little part-time gigs that they love. They could work at a bookstore on Saturdays when business is busy and they need an extra person to sell at the bookstore. Or you could teach one college course or one adult education course. Or you could sell handmade jewelry at street fairs. You could be a dog walker. You could plant gardens, maintain gardens. You could be an officiator, an umpire, a referee at basketball games. None of those pay well at all. But collectively, they may make enough money for somebody who's unhappy in their career to consider that portfolio, that patchwork quilt of gigs, to be a preferable alternative to their perhaps more stable but less satisfying job. Phone number again here, Work with Marty Nemco, if you want to work over any kind of work problem. I can usually help you find a path forward. The phone number, 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hi. It is you. Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello. How are you?
I am well. What gives me the honor of the call?
My name is John, and I recently got separated from the Navy, and I'm currently going to the school to try to be an electrical engineer. And I just feel that at age 32, after I'm done with school, I might be, 36, 37, maybe even 38. Would that be a smart career due to maybe someone not accepting me at my age for an entry-level position when they probably have a 24-year-old?
It's a gray area. It depends. I wouldn't let that deter you if you're doing great. So you're in school now. Are you doing great in your courses? A's and B's?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How much are you enjoying the field?
Well, currently, I just started. I joined the Navy at 23. I got out just recently, so I'm only doing the general ed to get to my major.
Oh, I see. What was your in the military? They usually put you. What were you doing in the military? What was your job?
I was a bosun's mate.
Okay, and for those who don't know, a bosun's mate is somebody who works on a boat, who's kind of an assistant. You do a little of everything, right? You're swabbing the decks and pulling in sails. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you're worried about your age, when you wouldn't be calling if you didn't, you know, there is a middle ground between swabbing decks and being an engineer, because engineering is actually the longest and hardest major. Because you have to take some physics, you have to take some chemistry, you have to take a lot of math. It's a long road. Even for people just starting out who are really gung-ho for school, it's typically a 5 or 6 year major. And if you're just starting out now, it could take you, a decade. So there's a middle ground that you might want to consider. It's called electronics engineering technologist or technician, where you're perhaps repairing robots, where you're maybe maintaining and testing and troubleshooting medical equipment. It's probably a 2-year program, and you get to do a lot of what engineers do with a fraction of the training. But of course, you're not designing new buildings or designing new software or whatever. Do you think you should perhaps look into one of those engineering technician or technologist jobs, or would you feel that would be inappropriate for you?
I think that's close to what I think really my heart is, because I really do enjoy video games, and I am pretty good at putting things back together, especially like if a computer is damaged, I can put it back together.
So if you're my brother, that's always my rule. I'm always asking myself, what would I do for my brother? Because otherwise it's too tempting for some career counselor to just be pontificating wildly. If you're my brother, I certainly don't mind you taking a general education course or two. Probably it'd be a good kind of way to kind of elevate some of your thinking. You get pretty down and dirty when you're on that boat, the ship or whatever you want to call it. So I'm happy you're taking a course at community college. That's great. But I'm wondering whether you might, if you like fixing things, I'm wondering whether you might try to get a job at a place like, at the Apple Genius Bar. The Apple stores have Genius Bars to help people with their iPhone problems and computer problems, or some other computer repair place, to see if, in fact, that is really is well-suited to you, which is what you're implying is true. What do you think about that as a low-risk way to put your toe in that water before you commit what could be 5, 6, 7, God knows, 10 years to becoming an entry-level engineer?
That sounds like a good idea.
All right. Well, I thank you very much for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Always feel free. I speak this to you as well as to any of the people who have ever called in. I love hearing progress reports or lack thereof. you know, it's very easy for me to give advice, but if it doesn't work, my listeners are better served if they hear it. Or if it works, it's better if they hear it. And then just emotionally, listeners who are listening to you generally are rooting for you. And if we can hear the story that you succeeded at X or didn't succeed at Y, it's like it's a very human way to run the show. So I encourage you to call back with your progress report, positive or negative. How's that?
Sounds good. Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot for calling. Again, you're my priority, so let me go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, I am a techie who wants to get out of tech. So what do you suggest?
Okay, great. So, you know, so many people do go into tech and they want to get out. And to be honest, it's disproportionately women who find it too isolating, too numbers, and they have more desire for relationality and not just sitting in front of a computer. To what extent is that the problem in your case?
No, that's not the problem. I don't have any problem with numbers. I can deal with numbers. I can deal with words.
Okay.
It's more of a there's not a lot of fulfilling work being done in the tech industry. So it's like we're building these things that don't really make a difference in the world.
Okay, so you're cause-driven. Let's start there. So tell me a little bit about the kind of making a difference can mean anything from developing a faster computer chip so people can play games faster, or their OLED TV doesn't delay. But for other people, the cause is helping the homeless. What are the kind of making a differences that are core to who you are and therefore would be more motivated to go through a career change to accomplish?
Well, I guess that's tough to talk about. I mean, I think, like, currently I've been given the opportunity. I'm a freelancer, so I was given an opportunity to do a SEO project to write a 1,000-word article about how to buy a guitar or how to buy how to learn how to ballroom dance. And on a day in which, like, the Florida shootings happened, it's really hard for me to get behind this and realize, like, oh, this is something that I really want to do. So I'm having a problem with the fact that money comes in for all these things that seem like such a it makes no difference in the world, and yet that's where the only way that I can make money. But it really, at the end of the day, like, that just makes no sense.
I'm going to argue with you, and I could be wrong, but I want you to feel free to argue back. The problem of school shootings or murders, or, you know, right now the media is portraying it as simply a problem of availability of guns. You know, if a force of guns were illegal, then they'd still, you know, get them through the black market. But it's too easy to get seduced by what the media focuses on. I'm going to make an argument that you will make a bigger difference in the world by writing an amazing article about how to buy a guitar and how to do ballroom dancing than you would if you got involved in a gun control movement. If you get involved in, for example, a gun control...
I totally disagree.
Okay,
totally
well, let me disagree. Make my argument, and then you can... Like I said, I welcome your disagreeing, but you need to hear my argument with an open mind, and then I will listen to you, and our listeners will then get the benefit of both of us.
Okay, please tell me, what is your
argument? With 100% certitude, if you write the definitive article on how to, for example, buy a guitar, people... could be thousands of people, especially since you're SEO-oriented, search engine optimization-oriented, thousands of people will end up not overpaying, getting a guitar they play better with, like better, and their lives improve with 100% certitude, thousands of people. If you are joining the gun control movement, there are millions of people in that with billions of dollars being devoted to it. You are a grain of sand on a large, large beach. You're incremental.
I think that's a pretty defeatist attitude. I feel like your 100% certitude that my article about buying a guitar is going to help people is a really inflated statistic. I don't agree with that.
Okay. Then you make the argument. Make the argument for why you're more likely to make a difference by getting involved and say, you know, let's
assume. Well, I didn't say that. I don't want to get involved in the gun control.
Okay.
Well,
my
point is that SEO... is this to the tech industry is like they're creating this bloated environment and people are being paid, like myself, being paid enormous salaries to create this content that at the end of the day means nothing. And it just, it's really deflating for somebody who's actually out there trying to create it.
All right. So if you feel, let's put aside whether, you know, I don't consider it worth nothing, but you do, and that's what counts, because I'm here not to, you know, I'm here to help you. You didn't buy my argument in the slightest. So you said that you find the SEO, even, you know, like, for example, I'm very proud of my writing. I've written 3,400 articles. I'm very frustrated that I don't get more page views, and I would, but I am so not marketing oriented. Somebody who could better SEO me to get more people to read my career counseling articles, I think would make a lot of difference in the world and be very, very valuable. But you,
Marty, I'm here to help you. I didn't even realize. Let me help you. I can totally hook you up.
See, well, there you go. But I mean, whether it be buying guitar or career counseling or whatever. The, you know, SEO is not this evil thing. Yes, it depends on what you're SEOing. If you're SEOing buying tobacco or some other crap that's going to make people's lives worse, or buy materialistic crap that nobody needs, of course you're making the world worse. But SEO intrinsically is not the Antichrist. It's a method for getting more eyeballs, and if it's to something worthy, then it's good. But let's grant you that SEO and all that stuff is not useful. What I'm interested in is you. What do you find more meaningful than SEO?
Oh, I'm a big lit nerd, so I'm a big book nerd, big literature person. So
okay.
I really should just be an academic, period.
Okay. All right. So you're a lit nerd. If you were, and these are preliminary questions to get, you know, believe me, we're going to get to the career goal. But if you were on a desert island, what one thing would you take to you to read?
Well, I would say Moby Dick.
Okay, great.
I've read it every year for the last 12 years.
Love it. And there's many reasons you could be loving Moby Dick because of the adventure, the
Well, it's just amazing writing. So
is it amazing writing per se, or is the underdog that guy who is the
No, it's really fantastic writing. Like, okay. There's just amazing. It's humorous. It's pithy. It's like there's a lot of really great pieces in there. That's amazing.
Love it. Which of the following is a good starting place for our conversation? Do you want to teach Moby Dick at UC Berkeley Extension? Do you want to get a PhD in literature? Do you want to teach high school and teach English? Do you want, as a sideline, do you want to write an article or a book taking an aspect of Moby Dick you like? Which of those is a good starting place for a conversation to a life more meaningful than SEO?
I'd probably say the latter. Like, the article would probably the least invasive of my life.
Okay,
probably
great.
The most.
And what would be the title? You know, you're not committing to anything. I believe in taking low-risk action. We're trying things out. We're brainstorming. What would be the title of an article you'd be pumped to start writing when we got off the phone tonight?
Feminist aspects of Moby Dick.
Okay. So let us get in touch with you. Get in touch with how you're feeling about the idea of when you're getting off the phone, either starting at the beginning and starting to write it, or outlining it, or researching it, taking a baby step toward an article called A Feminist Look at Moby Dick. How do you feel about the prospect of
that
doing
that? That feels fantastic.
Fantastic.
I just don't know where. My problem is, like, figuring out how to make money off of that. So,
right.
Like, disconnecting from the SEO world or the tech industry world.
Right. So the point is you're now creating a work sample. You write this great article, and feminism is certainly in these days. So if you write this article, you now have something to send to people. Say, look at the depth of my analysis from a feminist perspective, and you could be sending it to women's studies departments at universities. You could be saying, using that as a basis for a book proposal that might make money. You could offer a course on Coursera or whatever, where you're going to make some money off of it. It's a low risk, as you to use your term, a non-invasive approach to putting your toes in the water of something that gets you working on what you really care about, rather than SEO, which you don't care a whit about.
You know, you're right, Marty. I need to just do more of this, like the stuff, the passion projects, get it out there, put it out there, and see what happens.
Putting it
I
out
really
there is key.
You're fantastic.
Thank
I
you.
Love
use,
it.
Use your SEO expertise to put the keywords in the right places, to set the right meta tags, or whatever the heck today's, you know, SEO state-of-the-art magic is, and apply that to your article.
That's great. I love it. Thank you so much, Marty. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling Work with Marty.
Take care.
Yeah, you too. Again, I'm always trying to help you. I love the full range of problems between the previous caller had not worked in a million years, and probably his next job is going to be as a volunteer assistant teaching tennis in Daly City, to this woman who's an academic at her heart and wants to leave the world of search engine optimization, even if it helps thousands of people create, buy good guitars and learn ballroom dancing. I've never seen people happier than when dancing. Not men. Men look like they're having I don't mean to overgeneralize. Most men, when I look on a dance floor at a wedding, most men are dancing look like they're having a root canal, and the women look like they're having an orgasm, but that's a whole other story. But certainly, a well-written article can make a huge difference. As they say, it's an old cliche, the pen is mightier than the sword. And to search engine optimize it is what's critical these days to getting it publicized. In the old days, publicity is, hiring a publicist and taking advertisements. But today, more getting your book read by other people or articles is search engine optimization. But certainly there is nothing wrong with teaching people how to buy a guitar wisely or buying a car wisely. I think about all those people who spend all this money, for example, on a Mercedes or a Jaguar or a Beamer, which break down far more often than a Toyota. An article which look at Consumer Reports, the articles that Consumer Reports write about the reliability of Toyotas compared with the more expensive, more gas-guzzling Beamers and Jaguars and Mercedeses, does a huge amount for the world, even for the environment. So to argue that a search engine optimized article that does something good, not one that argues for something that's evil for the world, and there are certain products that are just evil. I like to use tobacco because it's the least controversial. But, article writing is intrinsically not valid, but she clearly didn't buy my argument. But anyway, I still like to prioritize. No, I think what I'll do is I've been taking calls for long enough. I think I'm going to switch now. I promoted in the show that I was going to talk about, in addition to these careers that are well-suited to career changers, I was going to talk about some careers for hands-on people, but I would like to give out the phone number one more time for the last time. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem of any sort, frankly, the tougher the better, because I've been doing this thing for, it'll be 29 years in October. I like new, I like hard. So call me with your tough problem. Phone number at Work with Marty Nemko is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Okay, careers for hands-on people. This is a little bit of an unusual one, but it really has very high job satisfaction, and that is athletic trainer. The public sees those trainers when they run out in the field, you're watching a game on TV, and they attend to the injured player. But trainers spend a lot more time off the field helping athletes preventing, pulled muscles and stuff, or recuperating. Treatments like bandaging or bracing or hot and cold treatments, they also, and this is a little more psychological, they evaluate when an athlete's ready to return to playing. And players want to get back really fast. They're not thinking, they say, I can do it, I can do it. It's a very interesting and challenging psychological job. Also, I remember talking to a trainer who said that his role very often is father confessor, because a trainer is not the boss like the coach or a teacher or whatever. And a lot of players will treat the, if the particular trainer as a warm and welcoming and good listening person, maybe a good advice giver even, if appropriate, can be a father confessor. So it's a very rewarding career. Also, by the way, it's true that most trainers work in high schools or colleges, or if you really move up to the pro school sports teams. But some work also in sports medicine clinics or in orthopedist offices in hospitals. So it may be easier to get your job there rather than the more sexy being the athletic trainer for the Golden Bears or the Golden State Warriors. Anyway, I want to give one more career for hands-on people, then we'll go to the phones. Massage therapist. This intimate career does not pay as well as it should, given how much pleasure and stress reduction accrues. Some of my most pleasurable experiences have been when I've gone for a massage. It's really, really quite wonderful. You can work at a spa or a massage studio. You can do corporate work. There are some companies that, especially startups, will let a massage person come in once a week on a Friday and do back massages on people. Or even, I love the story of the IRS. There was an IRS, I think it was in San Jose, the IRS office in San Jose. They brought in, I think it was during tax season when everybody was so stressed, they brought in a massage therapist. And of course, all of the workers loved it. But apparently the sounds of the oohs and ahs when it came out into the waiting room, which is kind of an odd experience. Imagine you're getting audited by the IRS and you're hearing the moans of pleasure coming out of the office. So he said, we're not getting rid of the idea, but we need to find a little more airtight room. Anyway, all right, let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help you? Hello? Are you there? Hello? Last time. Okay. I'll treat the lemons and turn it into lemonade. We only have a couple minutes left, so I'm not going to take any more calls. Another career for hands-on people. I should say one more thing about massage therapists. They don't all work for just pleasure. There's a whole niche which actually pays well, but it's pretty difficult to do psychologically, and that's medical massage. There are some serious medical conditions that cause muscle pain that can be helped sometimes by massage. So you may work in a hospital or a rehab facility or assisted living facility or make home visits. That's a niche. It's a, you know, me, it's an angel who's willing to do that. That's a pretty tough job, but I would be incomplete if I didn't mention it. The massage therapists are not just about pure pleasure. Okay, another hands-on career, also a bit health-related, is surgical technologist. And this is also a pretty good career for career changes because it's only a year or two of training, and yet you get to be a part of the life and death drama of the operating room, as you know, in those medical TV shows when the surgeon is calling a scalpel, retractor, whatever. They're calling for the surgical technologist, who is the one who hands the surgeon that. Also, they call them surge techs. They prepare the operating room. And maybe the patient. I remember when I was 16, I had my appendix out, and the surge tech came in and to shave my chest, which was not fun, believe me. It was embarrassing. It didn't hurt or anything. It just feels weird, but I digress. Anyway, but it's certainly one of those fields where having a calming demeanor is a plus if you're dealing with people post-surgery. Okay, one more. I've got time for one more for hands-on people, certainly electrician. Our lives are ever more electrified, and so there's an ever more need for electricians. They may install a new line for voice or data in our home or our business, a smart home system that automates our lighting, our air conditioning, security. An electrician, of course, expands a home or business from 110 volt, if it's an old home, to 220. It could, I had an electrician who troubleshooted the cause. I kept blowing circuit breakers. They can install lighting systems for a business or a city, or build an electrical system from scratch in new homes, new business, or hospitals. And it's also offshore proof, that nobody's going to be offshoring the electrician business. And of course, as I told one of the earlier callers, there's a niche within electrician which I think is particularly likely to burgeon, and that is being a technician in medical equipment. You're maintaining and repairing the imaging equipment, lab testing equipment, and also, of course, robotics technicians. Your job is to assemble and install, monitor, maintain, repair robots, which are mainstays of the present and especially the future workforce. Anyway, that is all the time. Let me say one more thing, one quick one. Solar energy installer. I've got mixed feelings about it. I keep reading about programs that the government is providing to train more solar installers, but at least in my practice, I've had a number of people tell me that they've tried to land a job as a solar installer, and they say the job market's saturated. So it usually now to get really hired as a solar energy installer, it's not just good enough to be good with your hands. You have to be able to not only handle the challenging installations, you usually have to be able to close sales or manage other workers and budgets. And one more downside, it's the working conditions. You're working outdoors, sometimes in hot weather, and roof work can be dangerous. You can be in attics, and it's cramped, and it's hot. Anyway, for hands-on people who love environmentalism, there may be no better career than solar installer. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7. You can call in for a workover, absolutely. Plus, I'm going to make the best case I can for being a maximum striver, and then I'm going to make the case why that's a bad idea. Until then, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.